Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 5:10. You are now listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is David O'Reilly, Chris Arms and Simon Beale. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Thank you all for coming in. If you are listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
Okay, coffee. Drinking just 2 cups of coffee a day could help you live 2 years longer. A study shows middle-aged men and women who consume 1 to 2 coffees daily have a longer life expectancy than those who don't drink it at all. This is, of course, if you only have it without sugar. Are you coffee drinkers?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it goes. We go through a lot of coffee.
Yeah, so more than 1 or 2 a day, would you say?
Typically, yes.
How many? Go on, confess.
Confess, it depends, you know. It depends how bad a day I'm having, really. I mean, it's not unknown for there to be, like, you know, a good 6 cups at the end of the day.
Okay.
And, you know, just sitting by the, you know.
Yeah, and do you drink tea as well, or yes. Always coffee?
Yeah,
so no, both?
Both.
So what would draw you to a cup of tea over a cup of coffee? Or do you have them at specific times of the day?
Not sure about specific times. Coffee, you know, coffee in the morning is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, inevitably when you end up out, right, you always end up in a coffee shop somewhere. And
yeah.
That kind of, you know. Or to one of the various establishments that serve coffee in a look-alike paper cup.
Yeah. Have you always been a coffee drinker?
Decaf. I don't know if that counts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have one, maybe two in the morning, and then on to tea for the rest of the day.
Okay.
But I don't know whether that will add on 2 years.
No, it said decaf doesn't.
No?
No. Oh, well. It said while decaffeinated can help you, you need a lot more of it. At least 3 cups daily.
Okay, I'll do that.
To get the same benefit. There you go.
Oh, no, I'm the opposite. I like a very strong cup of Bricklayer's tea in the morning to wake me up.
Okay.
And then coffee, definitely. I need a sharp taste of the tea. But you just wonder, though, okay, it will help you, they're saying, to get your life longer, but what does it do to other parts of your body, mm-hmm. which have to take tablets for when you're not well with other things?
Yeah. Well, I think the 1 or 2, it's when people are having kind of more than
five,
that.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know. But yeah, 1 or 2 is allegedly good for you. Mm. I'm one of those strange people, apparently, that coffee doesn't keep me awake. I have a cup of coffee in the morning. We've now resorted to having a cup of tea at night. But for years, we would have a cup of coffee before going to sleep, and it wouldn't keep us awake at all.
Yeah, it's. I know my wife won't drink caffeinated soft drinks after like 3 o'clock in the afternoon
because it keeps her awake. Yeah, a lot of people are like that.
It's like for me.
Makes no difference.
Makes no difference at all.
No.
I had a friend in Germany. She's a coffee connoisseur. And she would drink double espresso after dinner at night. And she said, the difference is when you put milk in it. That's what can keep you awake, apparently.
Oh, no, we have milk with ours.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're just all different.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank God.
This was an interesting one. There was a similar article quite recently, but it's always a fun one, I think, this. Brits abroad are notoriously picky about their tea, even resorting to taking their favourite brand with them. But our need to have a taste of home when travelling apparently goes even further, with potatoes being packed in our suitcases to ensure we're never too far for some proper chips. What is wrong with people? Is there anything... So if you were away, is there anything that you would take with you or anything that you would miss that much that you'd have to go and have it whilst you're away?
Tea.
Tea, oh, you yes. would. So you take tea with you?
Definitely.
And what's your brand of Yorkshire tea?
Yorkshire tea, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, especially some countries, the tea, like especially here, for example.
Sometimes it's not horrible. Great. Yeah.
It's horrible. It's because remember, it's when people have tea, or even, say in America, they when if you say, do you want a cup of tea, generally it'll be black.
Yeah.
And
Lipton,
it's weak.
They do Lipton in America,
Lipton's, which
definitely.
Is like
yeah.
horrible. Yeah. It's like dishwater. It's disgusting.
It kind of reminds me of those people that go on holiday and then write and complain to their travel agent that, well, I went to Spain on holiday and I couldn't get the following foods. It's like, well,
yes.
It's like, and you read about people that write this complaint. And it's like, really, guys, come on. You've gone on holiday. You are
absolutely.
Actually. But, you know, you can get fish and chips here. It's not exactly the hardest thing to avoid. And,
but I love trying the local food.
Absolutely. Why would you go somewhere and not try the local everything, basically?
Exactly.
What's the point in going on holiday? You may as well, you know, sit in your living room and complain.
Yeah, definitely. And people do that too. I mean, if I was away for a month, I'd be more interested in trying lots of different cuisines. But if I was away for a week, I think you can easily do a week of local food wherever you are, can't you?
I don't think I've ever taken anything away on holiday, but now that I live here, there are things I miss.
Okay.
So, like, I get the Yorkshire tea.
Yeah.
I get Barry's when I can. Irish Barry's is the best.
So. No. Actually, it is very good. It is good, I must say.
But going on holiday, you're only away, even if it's for a month.
Mm.
It's only a month.
Have you seen that ridiculous advert with the guy who fills his suitcase with baked beans?
Baked beans. but again, it's like, you know, last I checked, you could get baked beans in El Campo.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no, hang
and
on.
Mercadona.
Mercadona.
In Mercadona, it's the cheapest. It's £1.50.
But you can get...
It's very cheap.
It's like... But you can also get potatoes in Mercadona. I know this might come as a difficult concept to some people, but you can buy potatoes in Mercadona.
Very nice potatoes.
Yes, definitely. A selection of all different shapes and sizes.
Yes.
But I can't believe, you know, food... So Sunday roast, for example, that's number two on the list after a cup of tea. I mean, I'm again one of those strange. I didn't really have a Sunday roast till I was in my 20s. It wasn't something we did at home at all. So I've only got into eating Sunday roast since living in Spain, which is completely the wrong way round. So, but it's not something I'm obsessed about. I could go for months, if not years, without a Sunday roast and then go, oh, should we go for a Sunday roast? And then really enjoy it. Yeah. Or my husband does a nice one at home. But it's not like an obsessive, it's Sunday, we need to have Sunday roast.
Kind of doesn't work in the climate here very well.
Exactly. You know, it's only a winter thing.
Yeah, in the middle of July and August, having a Sunday roast.
Yes, definitely not.
It's like, probably quite doesn't go.
No, it's not quite the same. Absolutely. But even like a full English, something like that, I can't imagine sort of missing that. It's just something that you might fancy
nice
every so often, whatever country you're in.
Yeah.
Just like a cooked breakfast.
Yeah. Take it or leave it, right? Again,
absolutely.
There's plenty of other stuff you can eat that's just as good, just as nice.
Yes.
But as we said before, why be here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not prepared to acclimatise and assimilate, why bother?
Yeah, definitely. You know,
it's ignorant, really.
And also, particularly, that Spain is known for its cuisine.
Yeah. Correct.
For its healthy food,
100%.
For its local, for the fruit and vegetables and things, and the seafood, particularly on the coast. You know, we're really, really lucky with the food that's available to us here. It's not like, you know...
No.
We're not, so...
You're making me salivate now.
I
was in Duquesa Port a few weeks ago, and I couldn't believe it. It was... Everything was just bacon and eggs.
Mm.
Almost every
Why?
Other cafe.
It's like, it makes no sense.
Well,
like,
because they're simply...
it's a lot of Brits.
...looking after that type of Brit who... wants it. They know what their market wants, but I think it's pathetic.
That's great.
Right. Absolutely pathetic.
Okay, this is not the opinions of Talk Radio Europe. just...
Yes, it is.
So from eating potatoes to being a couch potato, Brits apparently spend 4 years of their adult lives on the sofa, eating, sleeping, working and watching TV. Adults typically spend 97.5 minutes on the couch every day. More than a third admitted they can't imagine going a day without sitting on their sofa. And for 43%, the sofa is where they spend most time compared to anywhere else in the home.
I think I'd say that's true for our dog. Our dog spends more time on our sofa than we do.
Okay.
I, to be honest, I think I spend a lot more than that.
Yeah.
I'm not retired, but I'm semi-retired now, so... I siesta on the sofa.
Yeah.
I have my breakfast on the sofa.
Yeah,
not always watching TV, but Yeah, I enjoy it.
It should be a comfy, it's a lounge area.
Yeah.
It should be somewhere where you enjoy to be. I don't think it's something that we should feel guilty about.
I spend probably half my day when I'm at home on the sofa. The trouble is, with all these box sets, I probably watch far too much television.
It's easy to do.
Especially on Netflix, it's just like, you know, the next episode starts in 10, 9, 8, 7, and you're sitting there.
Oh, I'll just let it play.
Yeah, about 4 and 5 hours later, you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's balance, isn't it? It's trying to, if you're doing that, it's hope, you know, if you can also go for a walk or, you know, it's trying to.
If you've got nothing else not to do, but if you've done what you wanted to do, why not relax?
Absolutely. And relaxation and sleep is very important.
Yes.
Very, very important.
These are the views of TRE.
Absolutely. I'll take that. The number of Britons age 100... Sorry, it's all very British, but it doesn't matter. We can relate wherever we're from. The number of Britons age 100 and over has reached a record high after doubling in the past 2 decades. There are an estimated 15,330 centenarians alive last year in England and Wales. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. So how do you feel about getting older? Can you imagine living to 100, and would you want to?
I think it would depend on what state you're in, both mentally and physically, right?
Yeah.
There comes a point where, you know, controversially, you know, the law that's going through the UK Parliament at the moment about assisted dying, right? Do you want to be over 100, mentally aware, but essentially physically it's just a shell?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's a kind of common sense compromise approach in there. And, you know, some people can accept that and some people won't. And I'm sure, you know, say the assisted dying bill in the UK will bring out all of those over the next few weeks.
I think it's such a fascinating subject that it's polarising, isn't it?
But I
think someone has said to me once, and I've never forgotten it, you know, we don't let our animals suffer.
Yes.
If our pets are in pain, although it's hard for us because we love them so much, we get them put down because they're suffering. But somehow that's not the same with humans. You know, if your partner or your parent is in pain and says, I want to die, I've had enough, why can't we help them?
I agree. I think you've obviously got to, balance it and be careful.
But
I think the reality is, you know, that the pet analogy is one I've heard people use so many times.
For me, it's, you know, with this Alzheimer's, always over us as we get a lot older. That's my biggest worry. I really would not want to be around if I haven't got my my mind. Because then it affects everything, your dignity mainly, and also financially. Because remember something, however much you put away for your retirement, if you think about it, I'm 70 now, so that's another 30 years. And, you know, are you going to be able to survive financially?
Absolutely.
And that's
particularly if you're in any kind of assisted living facility or home. They're really expensive.
Expensive. And I have to tell you something. I've seen over many, many years, some of the state-run old age homes, they are really not treated nicely. They're left there like bits of cabbage. Some of the healthcare assistants, they really are not nice. So, I mean, this is my own experience of visiting them over the many years. And if that happened to me, I'd much rather say ta-ra.
Exactly. I think the problem with the assisted dying and euthanasia and everything is that it's so hard to control, isn't it? Because
correct.
Of course you'll get people abusing the system. Oh, let's kill dad off so he can get his money type scenario, you know, which is horrendous. But I've seen it happen with so many friends over the years, the issue of money coming up when a parent's die and a family member comes out the woodwork. Oh no, they promised me, and people fighting over. I mean, it's horrendous.
Yeah. It brings out the worst. It brings out the worst in people.
Yeah.
It does.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, having watched relatives gone through and currently going through where they're basically, you know, in that state, it's like, that's not a quality of life.
No.
I actually don't think, I know you're seeing it's going through Parliament, But it keeps on getting corrected, the bill. And then it's got to go to the House of Lords, then back again, and then back to House of Lords. I just don't think it's ever going to go through. I think so many people are
There's just so many worried adjustments that
it needs. And no one really wants to be the one to say, yes, it's okay. People are they're a bit scared of taking the responsibility of giving that rubber stamp.
Because it could go so horribly wrong. That's the issue. It could be such a, I was going to say lease of life, which is totally the wrong expression to use. But a godsend to so many people and families, I think. But,
But we have to recognise, and I'm very grateful for the care that my mother had when she was going through her end of life. But without talking about it, our medical professionals do help.
Yeah.
They do.
Oh, they're marvellous.
They bring it, for my mother's situation, she was dying of cancer. And they helped her go quicker than she may not have gone if they didn't help her.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. No, I was in the same position with my mother. There's no question about it. The doctors and the nurses, we shouldn't forget the nurses.
Yes.
They're often, I mean, they're with that patient far more than the doctor is.
Yeah.
They're holding the hand and caressing, what have you. And they know at the point where we say, you know what? Okay. It's time now, a little bit more of this. And it's been going on for years and years and years.
It's the right thing, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because no one wants to see your loved ones in pain and suffering at all.
No. And it's all about dignity as well. Yeah. It's dignity.
Because the other way is you kind of prolong life to the detriment of the person indefinitely.
Yeah.
And that's like...
Which is a selfish thing.
It's tremendously selfish. Yeah. And that is the word, selfish.
Yeah. Okay, we better take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is David O'Reilly, Chris Arms and Simon Beale. It was all getting a bit heavy talking about death, but then we had an ad break and carried on talking about death. But we'll kind of move on because we're talking about like a whodunit, which is fictional murder. It appears that most of us are hooked on murder, fictional of course, to find a bit of peace. One in three Brits told a survey that they found reading or watching cozy crime more relaxing than meditation. 60% of us turn to a whodunit to escape our own lives.
Definitely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah,
I love my crime thrillers. Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen the new Thursday Murder Club film yet?
Yes.
Oh, have you? We were just talking about it.
Yeah. It's a stunning film.
Yeah. Really, do you think?
It's brilliant. And it's got another four books or something.
Yeah. They're already doing sequels. They've got two more in the can.
It's
brilliant,
isn't it? It's brilliant. I mean, the cast is brilliant. Yeah. Really clear. But aside from that,
I mean, I've seen some really bad reviews. And I'm confused because so many people say they love it.
Well, it's a bit hammy, I know. It is a bit that way, but you know what, it's, as you say, the actors are so good. I mean, they bring it to life, and you any bits of hamminess in the writing, you sort of let it go because you just love those actors, you know.
Exactly.
Well, just watch out for Pierce Brosnan, that's all else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's not doing great at the moment, is he? He keeps
He's not. I don't believe he's the best actor in this thing.
No.
But Helen Mirren. Oh,
or in most
brilliant.
Things, to be honest. There's been a few things over the years.
Absolutely. Like, oh, Mamma Mia.
Exactly.
He's the best singer in the world. Even better than my Neil Diamond.
I remember watching Mamma Mia in the cinema. My friend and I looked at each other and went, is this like a comedy? Is he joking? Like, is he supposed to sound like this? Is this part of the thing? Like, no, I don't think it is. It's very weird.
But I love it when he does his Irish, sorry, his American accents, and always a bit of the Irish twinge keeps coming out, doesn't it?
But even doing an Irish accent, he can't seem to do that. No, and he's from Ireland, which is very weird.
Yep.
Very. What was that gangster one recently? I can't remember. There's been
a heavy gangster, didn't he? Yeah, I saw that.
And he was just totally slated for his accent.
It was like, awful.
Yeah, really bad. So we like watching a murder then.
Yeah. David Baldacci.
Oh, my favourite.
Oh, isn't he great?
Brilliant.
A real page turner, isn't he? Brilliant.
But if you think of the number of sort of escapist murder sort of ones that have been running on UK TV. Mm. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, Midsommar Murders. It must be the, how many places?
The worst place to live.
No, seriously, I was offered a house there and I turned it down. It was only 5,000 quid, but so forget it.
You wouldn't want to.
Going back to the Ealing Studio stuff, like the Miss Marples and unbelievable. They're really fabulous.
Oh, well written.
It's always been something that as humans we've liked, isn't it? Yeah. I suppose it's the part in our brain to kind of, thankfully this isn't happening to us, it's happening to someone else, and oh, that's interesting, I wonder how I'd react if this happened. It's kind of putting yourself in someone else's shoes, I suppose.
Yeah, and if you've not seen it, there's the Netflix Only Murders in the Building. Have you seen
that's
that?
Very funny.
That's hilarious.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I haven't seen that. You've got to
watch that. There's like four series now or something. That's really good. It's another thing that's worth watching.
I must say, though, I think, though we like to slate it, but I think the American writers, both in comedy, but most certainly in crime dramas, they're fabulous writers. Yeah. They really bring it to life.
I have to say, I love a British drama, a crime drama. Yeah. Definitely. Sometimes I find the American ones a bit over the top with the music and no. I get it. Something's about to happen.
Then all these heavy assault rifles come in. I thought, why?
Yeah. Sometimes I think the British dramas are a bit more subtle in general.
Have you seen the new Saran Jones Hostage?
Yes.
That was very good.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that was so good.
Very good. Watch them in. Whatever, yeah. 5 hours, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable.
Really good.
I used to read a lot of the Rebus books, and it was also on TV. Yeah. Very, very good as well, I must say.
Yeah. It's nice when you're like, whether it's a book and a series or a TV series, and you're like, oh, I have to do the next, I have to turn the page, or I have to watch the next
episode.
Well,
that's why when I watched The Pit.
Yeah.
The last 2 days. God. I'm half asleep now.
You need more coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
A gallon.
Get you to live longer so you can watch more television.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the greatest critic.
There's a piece here talking about this. We talked about this on Women Talk the other day, but I wanted to save it to get your opinion as well. Passengers who blast music from their phones can be a blight on bus journeys, but they could soon face on the spot fines thanks to proposals to crack down on such antisocial behaviour. Yes.
Yeah, but can we take it stage further? I hate with a vengeance. Even in this country, Britain, wherever it is, people have to have this. They're on the phone. They don't put the phone to the ear. It's about half a foot away. And I can hear all the conversation the person is speaking to. It's all loud. Mm. I absolutely hate it. I hate it. And when it's on a bus or a tube, I actually want to take the phone up and smash it. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's more... I see that more here, but I know what you mean. You see people... I see it more here, people walking down the Paseo holding the phone out.
Yeah, well, that's right. But no. In the tubes. I was in London 3 weeks ago and it was horrendous.
Really?
Oh,
I tell you what.
What annoys me is kids playing games on their phones. like that. When you're on an aeroplane or wherever... I don't understand why the parents don't say put headphones in. I've seen people say something and the parents go nuts. Don't you tell my child what to do.
No, I was on, was it EasyJet? So about 3 weeks ago, I called over the stewardess. I said, just either move me to a quieter spot or take the bloody thing, excuse my French, away before I smash it.
Did she say something?
Yeah, she spoke to the parents.
Oh, good.
Yeah. She said, turn it down or put earphones on.
Okay.
It's selfish.
Good to know.
I think the worst one is in restaurants.
Oh,
people
have
got the phone in front of them, talking to somebody in restaurant. Now, if you've got to have a phone call, put your headphones in or put it to your ear, but don't have it on loudspeaker in a restaurant.
Well, it's ignorant. But you know something, I was in a restaurant last week. There was a young Scandinavian couple there, and they had two young children, and the four of them sat there for an hour and a half eating, just looking at their phones, not a word to each other.
Aww.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I don't know why
they
bothered going out.
No, exactly. It is sad when you see everyone at a table and they're all on their phones.
Unbelievable.
Not good. We better take another break.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
This is going to be an interesting one for me to tackle with three men mansplaining. Comedian and actor David Mitchell has defended mansplaining, insisting it's just what men call a conversation. Yeah. The term is often denounced as the patronising way a man explains things to women, which assumes she knows less. But Mitchell said male friendships often revolve around a little mutual explaining as they politely lecture each other instead of discussing feelings.
Absolutely. What's wrong with that? Absolutely. People shouldn't be so touchy.
I had this conversation with my brother-in-law just this last week. He was over visiting. Okay. And he felt it necessary to give his opinion on everything.
Okay.
Just having a conversation. Oh, that's lovely weather. Well, I don't think so. And just going for
the opposite
to get a bit of banter going. I'm going, but I don't want your opinion. When I want it, I'll ask. So it's not just to women.
Yeah.
Did you not put some tape on his mouth?
I tried to, but he
didn't
ran
like
away.
It. Yeah.
Didn't have him deported or something.
Well, he's gone now.
However it happened.
Yeah. No, a lot of us, we do tend to go around the houses a few times just to get to the point so we can just say in five words, but we don't. We feel the need to have to explain it. It's as if the other person hasn't got a clue what you're talking about when they really do.
Yeah.
And it can come over sounding patronised, but it's not. It's just a status speech.
So you don't see a difference when you're talking to women compared to talking to men? There isn't like a conscious...
I think some people are naturally inclined to do it more. And some people just are flat out patronising.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And, you know, and I do see it. And you do say to somebody, you know, hey, just back off. You don't actually have to say it like that. You know, they're treating them like, you know, they're an idiot, basically.
Mm. They're just damn rude, really.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, just not nice people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think...
So I'll just walk away.
I think some people do it more than others. And it's those that are, just rude. I think rude's a great way to describe it.
Exactly. So, you know, there's no point even discussing them. They're just horrible people. It's best just to walk away from them.
I quite find it not fun. That's probably the wrong word to use. But, you know, to just kind of, even if they're not taking it as banter, if they're being serious, I will give the banter back and I'll say something like, are you sure I'm going to be capable of doing this? You know, and kind
Correct.
Of belittle myself even
yeah.
more to kind
Sorry.
Of
Put them in the
to
place.
Make them realise how yeah. they're talking to me.
Put them in the place.
But I am a woman. I'm not sure if I can lift yeah. it on my own.
Yeah.
You know, something like that to make them yeah. hopefully realise or maybe...
A little bit of passive aggressiveness. A little bit of touch
Absolutely.
Of...
You can't beat it.
A slight bit of humour with it.
Yes.
And that generally gets the point over.
Yes. Yes. This is an interesting one. Fewer than half of people carry a physical wallet or purse as part of their day-to-day lives. The growing popularity of digital payments, letting people spend using cards, phones and watches, means leaving home without a physical wallet is more common. Do you all own a wallet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's a bag.
With
is there a wallet inside?
A wallet okay. inside.
And a change purse.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've got a wallet and I've got a bag like that, but probably... Most of the time I go out, the only thing I take is this, because I've got my cards on here, I've got my ID card on here, I've got everything else on here, and you know.
So you'll pay with your phone?
Pay with my phone, yeah, or
right,
my watch.
That's and, what they're saying,
my,
yeah.
I worry about that now, honestly. With all the cloning and everything, I just worry so much. Maybe I'm worrying... I come from the old world where, you know... And,
yeah, that's fair.
Where you know, we paid with cash.
Where we paid with cash, absolutely. But it's like if you go on Ryanair, EasyJet, they won't take cash now.
No.
Really?
No. You can't buy a coffee on the plane
Gosh.
Or anything unless it's a card. But as I say, with the phone, it has happened to me 2 years ago. I was scammed.
And
so it's just maybe very, very sensitive to it. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's fine. I mean, but I think, you know, I think it was the other day my wife went out and she left her phone behind. And I knew she'd be back within half an hour because I knew what was going to happen is she'd get to the till and realised she hadn't, she left
yeah.
the purse very rarely leaves the house. She takes her phone with her. And I knew what had happened. It's like, because, sorry enough, she came back in about 35 minutes going, yeah, I got to the till and I couldn't pay because I hadn't got my phone with me.
Yeah.
So
the opposite happens with me. I never pay on my phone, but I have the ability to. So I've sometimes been in a supermarket, realise I haven't got my card because I have my purse in my handbag. But if I go out, I'll have different handbags. So I never take my purse into smaller handbags. I'll just take my bank card into smaller handbags. And sometimes I'll forget to move it back again. So I've gone to pay, realise I haven't got my card and thought, oh, no, I can't pay. And then gone, oh, I can pay on my phone.
But
so
isn't it funny, though? You almost feel naked without your phone now.
Yes.
So, for example, I left home, was it last week? And I'm halfway down the mountain, and I thought, oh my God, what will I do? I was late for a meeting, but I drove back.
Yeah.
I can't.
It's
really
weird,
is,
isn't
it's
it?
It's a crutch now, isn't it? It's terrible.
And what's the worst that could happen?
You miss a car.
There'll be an emergency and we'll miss it. I mean, yeah. That's what we convince ourselves, yeah, that there's going to be something serious
and
happening.
And I can't be contacted.
And someone won't be able to reach us.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yet, how many times has that happened in the last 10 years?
Never.
Maybe never, yeah.
The amount of peace you feel if you do forget, well, for me, if I do forget my phone at home and I realise when I'm halfway there, I go, oh.
Yeah, no one can contact me. And I can't be distracted by my phone. Yeah. The only thing that bothers me, or the main thing that bothers me, is I use my phone as a camera. Mm-hmm. And I love taking photographs. And if I'm going somewhere anywhere other than the supermarket, I'm likely to be wanting to take a photo at some point. So I don't like going out with my phone, mainly from the camera aspect. Yeah. So that's
If you think what happens, I mean, we're all of a generation, I think, where as growing up as kids, right, your parents sent you out in the evening to, you know, first of all, you didn't have a phone. Mm-hmm. First of all, it was like, yeah, come back when the streetlights come on, all of that kind of stuff. They didn't know where you were or anything else. Whereas nowadays, kids have phones and parents turn the tracking on to know where their children are.
Yeah. And that's got more and more normal. I remember when that was first discussed, it was like, no, you've got to give your kids privacy. That's like weird. But now most parents have it, and it's been sold as a safety thing.
It's just part of the furniture of life of each individual now, a phone. But as you say, before we didn't have phones, even before we had computers, shows my age, but even then, you know, but we survived.
Of course. It's just different. It's just, it's, and again, it's not that any of these things are bad necessarily. It's just inventions of new things.
Evolution. It's just evolved, yes. I mean, it's evolved. And that's it, really.
Yeah. Okay, we better take the last break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the last part of today's Men Talk. With me in the studio is David O'Reilly, Chris Arms and Simon Beale. This was an interesting article I saw. The headline reads, "My friend is 49, but she's still living off the bank of mum and dad." I read into the article and the woman who's written the article said, "For years I've felt festering resentment towards Lucy that I could no longer endure, born of the fact that while I worked my backside off, Lucy's life was and still is funded by her parents." She goes on 4 foreign holidays a year, this woman, and lives in a beautiful 3-bedroom Victorian house that her parents bought her outright. The girl says, "For years, I simply thought Lucy was fun-loving and choosing to spend all her earnings on having a great time rather than save hard like I was. I was in awe of her carefree approach to life. That was until I discovered the reason she was so carefree was that her parents paid for pretty much everything. When they bought her, when her house, which they bought for her at the age of 28, needed completely rewiring to the tune of thousands of pounds. When I expressed sympathy, she replied, 'Oh, it's fine. My parents are paying.' My reaction was that this was a generous gesture from them until she revealed her parents were footing all of her bills. I lost some respect for her that day." Gosh. Imagine.
Jealous much?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can see that she is, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
My question is, obviously she'll inherit, unless the parents have got no more money left after helping her, she will inherit a lot of money. Now, when she has children, will she have the same attitude to her children?
Mm.
Right? So she wants to help. And if that's the case, yeah, why not? If I was a very wealthy guy, I would help my children. If they want to work, fine, good luck to them, but I would do everything I can to help them, give their life a good life.
I suppose that's a natural thing, but it's still important, I think, for children and growing into adults to understand the value of money,
value of money,
a hard day's work, and that stuff doesn't come easily to you in life.
No, I mean, buy the house, but let's say the upkeep of it, she should be chipping in at least something there. To live totally off is rather pathetic. Certainly enjoy, if they want to help you, enjoy it to a degree.
I think there's a compromise, right? I also think it's a generational thing. I mean, I know my parents didn't necessarily have the money to loan to us growing up as we are in the fortunate position to loan to our children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a generational thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not that we give them it's like, you know, can you loan us this for a period of time. And I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yes, they're going to get it through inheritance. But I jokingly say to our kids, yeah, Mum and I are just spending your inheritance anyway.
So. Yeah, I like that. That makes fun. I think that's funny.
I don't, if I had parents who are, well, we have to assume that they are, let's say, multi-millionaires, to be able to afford to buy a house outright for their 28-year-old daughter, they must have significant funds in the bank. If I had that, or if my mother and father had that, I'd gladly take it from them.
Exactly.
Gladly.
Yeah.
Now, I was from a very
young
age.
It would be weird to struggle if your parents were really wealthy. Yeah. It's one thing to not give them anything, but at the same time to struggle when there's no need
Gordon Ramsay said, was it the week in the newspapers? He said he's not going to leave his children anything.
Yeah.
Well, a load of rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. I bet you will. Sorry, David, you're saying.
No, I was just like, as generational thing, I think someone said earlier, it's exactly true.
Mm.
From a very young age, my dad, we were lucky, my dad had his own company, but he made me work, my sisters work at the firm. We got paid every week, and my mother took rent from us from the age of 14.
Same.
Wow, amazing.
To teach us about
the value of money. Yeah. The value of money.
But if they said, here's money, David, I would have said, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Where's the next one?
Yeah, exactly.
But as I say, it's important that, but also they've got to be seen to be making some form of contribution to know the value of money. I mean, as I say, I was earning, when I first started as an apprentice at hairdressing, I was earning £3, 45 pence.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother took from me £1, 75. Mm-hmm. But when I got married, she gave me that money back. But I didn't know I didn't know that.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's definitely a generational thing.
My
mother did the same.
Really?
When my mother passed away, I'm not going to say how much, but there were tens of thousands of pounds in my banking, in my post office account, that my mother put in, all the money I'd given her.
Yeah.
I think the paying rent thing is good as well, right? I think because they have to, you know, the only way people can learn is that, you know, your kids can stay or can live with you, and kids and children are staying more and more with their parents longer and longer. Mm. I mean, it's a more Spanish thing, right? In the sense, you often see these bigger families living together.
Yeah.
But you're seeing it more and more in the UK and everywhere else.
Well, the Asian families in the UK, you can have 3-4 generations in one house. And that's been going on
forever.
That's cultural,
yeah. But, I know of a number now of young adults who literally can't afford rent.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But the parents don't take rent from them. Now, that is wrong. Again, same thing with even if you just pay a minute amount of money, give something, and the rest they can put towards saving deposits, up for a home, a deposit. But take something.
I think the resentment can form if you're not giving anything. You know, if they say, "Oh, I can't afford to pay you for rent," but then they're going out partying, it's like, well, you can. You're choosing not to.
Yeah. you're giving the wrong signals to give them a complete blank check.
I agree.
But just a small check.
Contribution.
It's not that reasonable if, you know, kids are living in their parents' houses, you know, to pick up, you know, everything costs, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're eating, you're living there and you're not paying any of the utility bills and you're not paying any of the fuel bill, but you're going out and partying every night, that's it's not
you're using it like a hotel, you know, it's the classic thing, treating your parents' house like a hotel.
If the parents allow that, they're really not doing the kids any favours.
No, agreed.
No.
Just not. It's wrong signals and it's more stupid them, actually. And I bet they have very little respect for their parents as well.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Just think, oh, Mum will do it. You know, that kind of attitude.
And how old are they? 45 years of age.
Slightly embarrassing.
Exactly.
This is interesting. When does a hug between friends become a lover's embrace? When it lasts 7.2 seconds, according to researchers who clearly have too much time on their hand with a stopwatch. But this, I mean, 7 seconds is a long time, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it depends on the situation. Like if
somebody you haven't seen for years.
I recently had a friend who's going through something really difficult.
Right.
And you do hold on a little bit longer for that.
That's true, actually.
But how tight? Very. That's a thing.
Yeah, very.
And are your arms just around
all
his back?
All the way around.
No. That means you're not like stroking the back.
Right? Not because you can do.
But that's where the 7 seconds comes in.
Keep the hands visible.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, but I think on a general kind of day to day. I mean, normally we'd, especially, I mean, living in Spain, the European kind of thing. So I don't hug everyone. I normally hug someone, friends I'm talking about, that either haven't seen for a while or that I'm, you know, really close to. And instead of doing the kiss thing, sometimes a hug is more personal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it was really nice to see someone. I'll give them a big hug. But 7 seconds is a long time.
It is when you say it is a long time, but as you say, somebody's obviously got nothing better to do with their life than sit there with a stopwatch and watch people.
Yeah.
We can imagine walking down the street going, oh, how long are they going to hug for?
Yeah. 6 seconds, clearly, friends. Right. 7 seconds, I know what you're doing.
You know what's probably happened? They've probably got some grant to a government grant to a university about £300,000 just to go and do research on it.
Exactly. You can think of better ways of spending money, surely. Yeah. Cat owner. Any cat owners here?
No.
Oh, well, I won't do this. I'll be a waste of time. Okay. Generation Z wants to scrap wedding traditions such as speeches, cakes, and even taking the groom's surname. 3 in 5 would like an alternative to a traditional wedding cake, while 90% would do away with the after party. The best bit, surely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, the after party's...
Oh, here we go, the woke again. Honestly. Yeah. What is it with it? There's so much in our life where people have to find things wrong in our life just to be difficult.
Or different.
Different, what have you. Oh,
do what you want to do, right?
I mean, Yeah.
But traditions are lovely, and we keep messing around with traditions generally.
I don't agree.
I like some traditions.
Oh no, I do too. That's but I just think if people don't want to do it, then that's fine.
But don't start telling us or other people what they should and shouldn't
do.
Do your own things.
But we live in a global world. There are so many different types of traditions. Indian traditions, Irish traditions, British traditions, Spanish traditions. Yeah. They don't take their partner's names.
No, exactly.
I'm just thinking the same thing. The Spanish take, you know, you end up with double surnames. Mm-hmm. So,
each to his own.
Yeah.
Is it really that important?
Yeah, but as I say, it's when those people who want to be different, they have to spout forth loudly, what you're doing now is old, it's rubbish and this and that. Be quiet.
I suppose it might be sad for the parents of a child getting married if the father had always looked forward to walking his daughter down the aisle or but always thought about doing the father of the bride speech or something like that, and then she turns around and said, oh no, we're doing something different, we don't want any of that.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's got to allow her to do that because it's her wedding and her choice. But that would be hard, I suppose, as a father.
Well, again, it's called compromise and respecting people's feelings and doing a bit of this and a bit of that.
Yeah.
As long as you do that, nothing wrong.
I think with weddings as well, the bride and groom should be, I mean, this should sound really obvious, but it doesn't always happen at all. The bride and groom should invite who they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But a lot of things have changed. I mean, when we got married, if I think of the invite list, there was a lot of my parents' friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, having the same conversation with my daughter and her other half at the moment, and it's very much more the list you were talking about. It's not
Dad's business associates.
No, it's not.
No, I agree. It shouldn't be.
And, you know, but don't ram your
views down your throat.
Down people's throat. Just let people do what they want, and it's a compromise.
Absolutely. I do find it strange when, and also the other way around, it's become quite fashionable, particularly I suppose where we live, for young kids like 1, 2, 3 years old to have really extravagant parties, and the parents invite all their adult friends that don't even know the kid, and they're all drinking and having a great time, where it's a 1 year old's birthday, it's very different. Yeah. Very different.
Now
as queer as folk. Is that what they say?
I should say.
We've got 2 minutes left to talk about children missing out on playing out. It's saying a third of children do not play outdoors after school. Well, 1 in 5 don't even do it at weekends. I mean, this is UK. I think it happens a lot more here because of the weather. Yeah. But
I think we said this earlier, right? When I was growing up, you know, it was like the come back when the streetlights come on.
Yeah.
No phone. My parents didn't know where I was. or anything else. So I think the whole culture of playing out has massively changed.
Mm. Well, yeah, because why? They want to play on their computers or the iPads or this or that. And they're just getting... I look at my grandchildren, for example, and I said to my grandson, I hadn't seen him for 3 months. I went, "Hi, Parker." And he's carrying on.
Oh, no, he's not that was looking
it.
At you.
That was it. Mm. So, yeah, this is how it is now. Whereas when we were kids, marvellous. You always knew outside in the street, there's always a game of football. The two gates opposite each other on the road were the goals. Mm-hmm. And when cars came down, there weren't as many cars, but they drove slowly, knowing there's probably kids.
It was a good way of building trust, I think, as well, between parents and kids. If your parents said you need to be back by 6,
correct,
you'd get some kids that would be like, "Oh, it's nearly 6, we've got to go home." And others are like, "Oh, I don't really care." And then they get grounded. And, you know, it was always interesting, the dynamics and the relationship between the kids and their parents, and whether there was respect and trust there. And I think that's a big part of growing up.
Yeah.
Those sort of boundaries.
Without doubt. Yeah, it's just... just how society's gone, you know. It's just, again, it's all evolved and it's not always good.
Anything to say? 30-odd seconds?
Okay.
Okay, marvellous. Well, thank you all very much for coming in today. Thank you to David. Thank you to Chris. Thank you to Simon very much. Howard Brereton is next with Spain Today, so no need to go anywhere. Stay tuned to Talk Radio Europe. It is my weekend, 3-day weekend, so I will be back on Monday at 4 o'clock. But the book show is tonight after Howard. You've got 2 more hours of me interviewing lots of interesting and fascinating authors. They're both talking about David Baldacci earlier. I've interviewed him quite a few times on the book show. There you go.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.